few years just to give ourselves time to digest some of the challenges we've taken on. I think for the committee itself, we do have some legislative amendments in the pipeline. We are really desperate for those to make some progress. I think they're still with the department, but they have been approved, as far as we understand, by the department. But if we can get that on your agenda, we would be really happy.
Legislation is required. It's the same legislation. And we'd obviously like, if you give us a bit more information, that we can start, because it's unacceptable that it's taken such a long time to get there. Secondly, the milieu that you operate in, if you could just further clarify that you actually are operating in a criminal environment using civil legal methods, and just explain a little bit about the tribunal that you've got and how effective that is. And then the difficulty, thirdly, about the recovery of the social development funds from the civil servants. Just what difficulties are you having? You indicated low salaries, but they are earning a salary. Surely one should put in some stop order or something like that. Thank you.
Yes, it's not a difficult question. But corruption is a crime. So why aren't you in another department that's primarily targeted to fight crime? Why are you in justice? Why are you located in justice?
Sorry. Cooperation with other units. I would like you to just specify in detail your cooperation with the SO.
Yeah, I'm going to deal with where we fit in and so on. Faik will try and deal with some of the other questions. Essentially, the SIU is a little bit like a standing commission of inquiry. We've got those kinds of powers. We are a separate and independent agency. So we're not part of the NPA, not part of the police or anybody else. We get our money through justice, but we report directly to Parliament. So in that sense, we are a fairly unique organization in the world, actually. Not too many like us. I think the difference from a normal commission is that we have been given the powers to litigate as well. So it's not just like a commission that finds problems. We're also able to implement the solutions. But at the time, and I think it's probably correctly so, there was a feeling there are enough law enforcement bodies. We're not trying to create another one that's going to arrest and charge people. So where we have the evidence of criminal activity, as I've said before, we will, in many cases, do a full investigation, prepare a court-ready docket, but we will then work with the police or the Scorpions. They will do the arrest. The NPA will do the charging in court. But we work very closely with them so that the work doesn't have to be duplicated. So, we have a unique role where we are at the moment, but we also try and make sure that things don't fall between the cracks, between the different agencies that there are. So our focus is very much on the recovery of money. I think the other defining feature, as I've said before, is we have a power to act even when there is not a crime. Simply, if the right procedures were not followed in a tender process, we don't have to prove that there was corruption. You can have tried to have the tender set aside simply on the grounds, on civil grounds, that the right procedures were not followed. So that will define it a little bit. I think in the vast bulk of our cases where there is criminal activity, we work with the police. Where there are some of our more complex investigations, we work with the Scorpion. So it really depends a bit on the nature of the investigation and the capacity that there is elsewhere to work, to do the work that is required. I think Faik will deal with just the legal changes and the recovery issues that we're having.
Thank you, Chairperson. So let me just distinguish between two legal amendment processes. The first one is amending the SIU Act, and the primary issue there is amending the part dealing with our power to litigate. Whether we have the power to act on behalf of another government department. And so we have submitted the proposed amendments, and that's been in the pipeline. The good news is that in the course of August last year, we've had some discussions with the Justice Department, and so they're trying to accelerate that amendment. So hopefully within this year still, before June, we can see some movement there. And that will, I think, allow us to make greater use of the tribunal, especially with the procurement-related matters that we're getting on board. Specifically, if you come across, for example, the Department of Housing, they have a number of these contracts where service providers are not performing. So, you know, you want to be able to take those matters to the tribunal and this is on performance, for example. And so the area that we're moving into, the power to litigate, is becoming extremely important. That's critical, which I'm not sure that this committee is aware of, is the amendment to the PFMA. And there's a proposal, I think it's section 255 of the Act, which suggests that in instances, it firstly gives national treasury officials the power to investigate transgressions in terms of the PFMA Act. But the interesting part is that the SIU can be appointed to do those investigations and assume all of the powers in terms of the PFMA, which I think will allow us to move very strongly into this forensic services niche that we've been talking about. And that part is as critical as the amendment to the SIU Act. Then with regard to the civil service recovery, we have had discussions since last year with SASA, so as to make direct deductions of PASTO. Unfortunately, there's been some logistical and administrative delays, but as of next month, I think we'll start making greater progress in that regard. SASA, of course, has suggested that they take over part of the recovery. We're still discussing it with them because I don't think there's an appreciation of the magnitude of this operation. But I think clearly that's something which we've been working on.
We because of time factors, we will have to be a bit limited in the questions we can ask. But anyway, Jerry?
Thank you, Shepherdson. My question is related to driver's licenses, your fight against corruption so far as driver's licenses is concerned. You know, there are testing stations which are notoriously known that people have to pay bribes to get licenses. But it has so developed to such an extent that if a person wants to go straight, you don't get assessed because you have got to bribe your way in. And then you find that these people are roaming around looking for a person. When a person comes to a testing station, he's attended by people who are roaming around there. I was assisting someone from my constituency whose driver's learner's license was about to expire. And then I tried to phone to book. And even the person at that booking place was saying, why don't you phone such a place? Because there, you just pay and you get your license. My question is, are you managing this fight against corruption so far as driver's licenses are concerned?
Okay, just two quick ones. Just to say that you've obviously exceeded your target of the 100 million in terms of savings and recovery. Nearly double the target actually, which is highly commendable. I just wanted to ask whether you have sufficient capacity, both financial and human, to sustain that sort of success. And secondly, there was a proclamation issued on witness protection. Just slightly concerned if you could maybe just give us, because I mean that's one unit where we can't afford corruption and leaks and systemic problems.
victim. Yeah, but Mr. Hoffman is also in charge of the act of prophecy. You see coming back onto the floor, the act of prophecy. Yes.
Would it be from an operational point of view, wouldn't it strengthen your unit through you, Chair, immensely if the TSO is integrated with your unit?
Got a horrendous program which I'll report to you next week. We've got five more major bills coming which all have to be passed before the end of August, and we've got a B list of about 8 bills, and this doesn't appear on that list. But what you could do for us is write us a paragraph and email it to Christine or Sue and about what exactly these amendments mean, and then we will put pressure on the department and in the exit report for the new portfolio committee. I might add that in a meeting between the whip and myself and the Minister and Deputy Minister and DG, they are extremely positive about the reports we wrote, and they've given us full replies, and they're going to come and report formally to the committee. But there are two other pieces of legislation they prepared to do, and they want to negotiate. That's the Human Rights Commission Act as it's amended, and the Gender Commission Act as it's amended. So I don't think it's going to be on the agenda, not because the executive doesn't want it, because Parliament is not setting for much of the time, but just tell us so that if it's for the new committee that comes in, they will have to follow up on these issues. Will the two researchers note that we get that from them within 7 days? But over to you. Thank you, Chair. Matt, to deal with Mr. Simonioni's question on the DLPCs. There's approximately 380 DLPCs nationally. Now, as Willis indicated, we aim to provide a complete forensic service there. Amongst others, we're trying to prevent irregular issuing of licenses as well. And of course, that's not something that we can do directly. It's something that we could possibly facilitate and deal with indirectly. One of the things, to date, we've ordered approximately 220 DLTCs nationally. We have prioritized about 55 DLTCs, and those were the red flag ones that the department, National Department of Transport, has put forward. And as you'll see in the fact sheet, we've made some significant progress there. But with regard to the prevention issue, one of the difficulties, as you've correctly pointed out, is that because of the waiting list, because of the delay in issuing licenses, people often resort to bribery. One which is working reasonably well, one which is new, and then one where there's some problem, so that we can see how that can happen. So it's one of the ways which we thought we could facilitate, because a forensic order solution is not the answering alone. And then, of course, part of that is we've given some of our own people who have experience in the management of DLPCs to support the management structure. It's a little bit outside of our core mandate, but we think that we need to help this process. Secondly, with regard to Ms. Johnson's question on the capacity and the sustainability, as Willis indicated, we're going to grow to approximately 950,000 in 2 years. Now, that's a big number. One of the challenges we've encountered is that you can grow the body count, but you need to build capability. And so we've...
for the research of authors and for consideration of our focus, yeah, The law is what we do is when we do the report. We send this to the stakeholder to look at. The first question just is to cover what you say to us. And you are free to add here because you don't need to try to fit with your thing. But the second question is that this is an initial use of recommendation. This you can challenge us, you just put in your own check and you don't use what you say. That's fine. But the committee decides usually some of the business and ideas are undergoing a single instance in any major divergence between a stakeholder and ourselves. So we will take to this copy before they can try things. So we don't want to respond in great detail, but they can tell us about this. You know what? This is what she puts to the council of few of those, but you know what? Not only there are other things to teach, but you should come to anything, what's the comparing on? Really, you've been into the public domain for a while, you're telling us the personal systems, complications, and so on. We imagine you put a paragraph or two, with this between instruments, but on why is the problem? Because this committee will now ask the incoming committee, or even meet you again before the parliamentary year ends. Progress, the one thing is progress in this. Now, you know, most of us feel that most of those people should really be in jail, but they recognize that there's 40,000 people in jail. So on the recovery thing, we'll take up the teaching now, but generally we would, in our report, take that up. Then basically, I don't think, would it not be correct if it's not a little bit of a generally, as things go, as a parliamentary committee goes, there's very limited technical support. And we don't really know often what goes on in the initiative, because people come to, everybody does this, they present a better picture than you really think. It's not a parliament in the world. Unlike other parliaments, where the chairperson and the 18 members of staff, and the average member has 5 members of staff, it's not like that, yeah. We have 1.5 of our members, so very hard to do this. And you know, the chairperson is you also. And this is also everybody without the parliament at the end of the month. So with all these challenges, we can only, within the context of these constraints, say that this is a very good unit, frankly. As parliamentary reports go, this is a very good report. That we are very impressed, very correct with the work done. That we don't know why, maybe it's because you're so focused on that, it's so easy for you. Unlike just the Human Rights Commission, or the Gender Commission, and so on, or the other bodies that have said it's very frequently important. It's quite tiny. This is not a big report, you know, two different bodies of the Gender Commission. But, I think this is very impressive report. Very impressive. I don't know if you get more time, it might explode with you. Even though you're very focused and direct, and maybe it's easier for you to be successful, there must be lessons that you have to offer to other students, other sectors of the state, departments of the state, and so on. You have no time to engage with them. In a way, it's really good at that. Good that you're so successful. Bad that it communicates the sense of corruption outside. I mean, you're talking about 30 billion. You know, lots of things like, what do you mean by the future project management and so on? You haven't got time to ask. But what we will do is send it to you. Where we pick up on things when you make a report that have not been responded to now, we will give you time. There's no justification for this report, unlike the ones we did last year. I read most of your report last time, and there's lots of questions I want to ask, and it's not like a thing they would. Yeah, and it was something to do with the fact that Willie and I are all using it from me. Or even more interestingly, I think that the chairperson is, you know, that's the whole judgment on the proceedings. But he was the only so-called one-for-one player in non-race, you know, that's the same as this morning. You might have forgotten. He drove me to a case on that, you know, to start using. He called Elizabeth for a case that is constant. And I sincerely hope that he doesn't drive now. As badly as he told me. Because we were terrified, you and I, at how he was driving. And once he was talking to you more than I do. And he took a time, and it was a Renault, wasn't it? The sport was in the Renault.
Was it the Renault? Yeah. There's nothing to do with all of that.
It's to do with the fact that the work is really quite impressive from a recent time. But there's one thing that really has been helping us for a very long time. On page 7, he got the point. And this photograph seems to be of a woman with hands and clubs. Right? And I cannot work out what the significance is of that.
Recovering money in the rural Transkei in the middle of the rainstorm. He actually stripped down to the bare essentials to swim across the Swaden River to go and get his acknowledgement of debt signed. So, you know, many of the recoveries we do are in deep, deep rural areas, no addresses, tracking people down and
when you're talking about recoveries, I thought it's from the civil servants who have been abusing their positions.
Exactly.
Not from the beneficiaries of their area.
Exactly.
They are poor people.
Remember that we have kept the department. Many of them are no longer in the department concerned. A lot of them were temporary workers as well, sometimes long-term temporary workers, but not all of them are in department. I think that the issue with SASA is one that is a little bit worth pursuing. We, you know, there's issues about whether we have the legal power to go and recover it for them. So I think we've proposed that they give us the power of attorney, and there's been a lot of legal discussion about exactly how that would work. But let me say that in the annual report, we started reporting not just on the amount of judgments or AODs that we get, but how much cash we actually get in. So in the last year, you'll see that of the 39 million rands worth of AODs signed, we managed to get about 6 million rand in hard cash in. This year so far, we've got in about 12 million. So we are gearing up our capacity to go and collect. But at the moment, we're doing it through stop orders, through people paying into the bank accounts. And I think for any attorney who's done debt collecting, they will understand that this is not an easy process, especially because even if we take people to court to get a proper judgment, many of them just can't afford to pay more than 100 or 200 rand. So a court isn't going to order them or isn't going to imprison them for that debt if they don't pay. But the Auditor General has been engaging with us about this, and we are really jacking up our capability to do that. Thank you, sir.
Well, we've got 2 hours left and we've got 6 units, that's 20 minutes per unit. Clearly, we're not going to do justice to each one, and I would suggest you seriously consider seeing how far we go, and in the next week or so, fitting in a further follow-up session with the NPA. It's crucial that we engage properly, even the SIU. There are so many questions that one can put, and it's a huge tool in fighting crime in South Africa, so I would just emphasize that check. Our concern.
Yeah, we're not going to do next week. What I was going to suggest is exactly that. One of the suggestions we've got is, can we truncate the presentation for now? I don't think we need to bring everybody in next week, or we'll not next week. We'll find a slot. It suits you as well. You decide who you think should appear now, and then we'll find another slot. We apologize. It's just as I repeatedly say, we didn't know it was going to be budget day today, or we're going to have this problem of Parliament deciding that we were in very soon this year rather than longer, you know. So we do apologize. It's really bad that we And also as a new chair, I didn't realize that the range of reports, and I wasn't guided either by anybody. So I thought we'd finish in a 3.5 hour slot. So there we are, you'll help us. But we'll sit till 12. Yeah.
Is it possible that we can sit tomorrow, because they have the sitting. If you can ask permission for us to sit in the committee tomorrow.
The powers that be have agreed on Tuesday afternoon, Thursday afternoon, they say if it's not a problem, we can sit, given our legislative load. Now, can we negotiate that? I don't know what their commitments are tomorrow. And can you think about it? Is there a possibility we could, some of you, sit tomorrow afternoon? We can't sit in the morning. It's caucus in the morning. So it'll be from, oh my God, we've got a Namibian delegation here, and he's still negotiating. I've got US students. I don't have to be here. It's fine. One of them will chair, and we'll finish the business. It's fine. Bulalani will chair. Okay?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Chair, I was going to suggest that because of the time factor, that I deal with the overview very, very fast, and then we tackle only two units, preferably the biggest unit, NPS and the DSO. Then the rest we can take them over to tomorrow to a day of meeting. Thank you. Okay, again, what I'm going to do is first to introduce the business head unit, the unit business head who are here, and thereafter they will then introduce their own members, regional heads, and what they do, and then I will then embark on the overview. As you may well know, a well-known person who is not a good driver, with the Hofmeyer sitting next to me, they had, yeah. He hasn't changed. With the Hofmeyer sitting next to me, members of the committee, is the head of AFU, the Asset Forfeiture Unit. And then thereafter, I'll move over to Dr. Salas Ramayite, who is the head of NSSD, the National Specialist Service Division. And then I'll move over to Advocate in the back over there. He is the acting head of NPS. And then I'll move over to the DSO. Unfortunately, the head of DSO, Advocate Leonard McCarthy, is not in, but he's represented by Advocate Tanda Ngwengwe, who's sitting right at the back there. And then we have the acting CEO of the NPA, Sister Simbelan. I'll hand over to each and every one of them to introduce their people and then I kick off. Thank you.
Erwin Cronier, the head of our Cape Town office, is recognized to pay for score 1.
Thank you, Chairperson. Anton Ackermann, the head of the Priority Times Integration Unit. Chris Jordan, the head of the Michelle Times Unit, assisted by Michael Gardner, who is the head, local head of the FCC Cape Town, Michelle Ramosi, and Naomi Humphrey. I do not have anyone from Business Protection. I'm actually now sort of personally directly responsible. And then the head of social offences in the affairs unit for commercial play, unfortunately, is covering overseas. But we have set by Romney Kim. Thank you.
So, very quickly, maybe we just see stuff for you.
Would like to go on to AMC. Katie Subramanian, ANC.
Hassan Solomon, ANC.
Carol Johnson, ANC.
Clarence Arnold, Committee Assistant.
She's gone to attend to a matter. She's our very efficient secretary. And we've got Christine Filstone as the researcher, and Sue Ann Isaac, who's semi-attached to our committee, hiding there in the back.
And I'm Eunice Karim from the Business in Melbourne and obviously ANC. Okay, over to you.
Thank you, sir. Sir, by way of introduction, may I state that the NPS is its role in the CJS as not only a prosecutor of crime, but also as a key driver in creating a safer and more secure South Africa by prosecuting speedily and effectively in conjunction with all its partners. The NPA can significantly reduce national crime levels. The NPA has a special stakeholders check, such as SAPS, NIA, DCS, SIU. The PGR methodology that is proving so successful entails close cooperation between NPA prosecutors and SAPS investigators. An organized crime initiative between NPS, AFU and SAPS was launched in 2006 and will lead to specialized prosecutors being appointed to strategically located courts. I will not belabor this House Chair with the structure of the organization. Suffice it to say that it is on the screen. Pertaining to government chair, as you may well know, the NPA was established in 1998. And from 1998 up till 2004, the NPA was operating with annual strategy. A significant majority of the NPA's prosecutors are housed in the NPS. Like I said, the NPS is the biggest unit in the organization, which is by far the biggest single unit. Due to its size and spread of responsibility across most South African courts, the NPS was heavily impacted by a 20% prosecutor vacancy rate. I've already touched on this in advance. The immediate and obvious remedy is to get sufficiently trained prosecutors into the state. A total of 652 prosecutor vacancies was advertised, and these vacancies are presently being filled. But like I said, because of appointing people already within the system, we don't see that significant reduction in the vacancy rate. Of course, we are faced with a problem again of some of our experienced prosecutors. I don't want to say been taken, but imposed by the legislature and be put on the bench. This has been addressed between the NPA and the Legislative Commission. And we hope again that once the OSD, the Occupation Specific Dispensation that relates to salaries of prosecutors is put in place, this may put us in a better state in as far as recruiting and attracting better skilled people. I'll move then share to the highlights of the various operational units, but I'll not go into detail, seeing that we are also becoming with their stats and all. Both higher and the lower court prosecutors met their conviction rate charges of about 85%, but case finalization numbers dropped to below the previous period. A lot of discussion has taken place around this, and I want to believe questions may come as to what has been done and all that, we shall be able to respond to that. Other remedies being energetically pursued include rolling out community courts across the country encouraging the use of justice processes such as admissions of guilt, plea bargaining, and diversions to move first and less serious offenders through the system quicker, and one-off cleanup projects to sharply reduce case and administrative backlog. Innovative projects such as community prosecutions and restorative justice are currently being piloted and show promise as avenues for faster and targeted justice in the future. The AFU, that is Asset Forfeiture Unit, continued gaining momentum to record its best results yet. In this financial year, the AFU initiated 252 cases. It has frozen assets of over 1.25 billion and it has seized assets worth more than 100 million. They had a success rate of 82%. They will talk to this in detail. In total, 19 million was contributed to the criminal asset recovery account, that is CARA. When coming to the DSO, the DSO initiated 368 new investigations and finalized 264 thereof. It also finalized 214 prosecutions with a conviction rate of 85%. They have arrested 617 suspects and restrained assets worth about 1.05 billion rand. Notable successes included the arrest of suspects in the cable matter, confiscating illegal drugs worth over 600 million, and instituting successful prosecutions in the LaserNet and the Travelgate matter. This is the PCLU. This is a specialist unit mandated to tackle cases that threaten national security, as well as issues arising from the final report of the TRC hearing. The PCLU was involved in various high-profile cases with several highly sensitive matters still under investigation. The AFU also facilitated the disbursement of some funds from CARA to inter alia for finding persons identified as missing by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Now, the finding of missing persons function is located in the PCLU, and the finding as adjudicated thereof has been coming from AFU. The highlights now of the Special Commercial Crime Unit. For more than 5 years, the FCCU has maintained its proud record of a 95% plus conviction rate. Cases included prominent business people, NPA personnel, business people, and civil servants. The FCCU, in partnership with SAPS Commercial Branch and other stakeholders, is spearheading the development of a prosecution-guided investigation, the so-called PGI methodology, for tackling criminal investigation. The PGI is proving to be clearly superior to earlier procedures and is being rolled out wherever it can be applied appropriately. I now move to the Sexual Offences and Community Affairs Unit. It is referred to as SOCA, S-O-C-A. It acts against the victimization of women and children with specialized prosecutors positioned in dedicated sexual offences courts. Supporting activities operated by SOCA include the multidisciplinary TCCs, the Tutuzela Care Centers, which are recognized by the United Nations General Assembly as a world best practice model, quotation close, in the field of gender violence management and response. SOCA launched its 365 National Action Plan on No Violence Against Women and Children,
which is aimed at combining initiatives between government, the private sector, and the NGOs. With regard to the Office of Youth Officer Protection, this office has for the past 6 years maintained an outstanding record of not having a single witness who complied with this protection process. Of not having a single one with the compliance. The impressions, harms, or attacks, we have not for the past 6 years addressed all those incidents. The Women's Protection Unit's best practices philosophy has led to this being consistently acclaimed
as being among the top five witness protection agencies in the world, with countries such as Germany requesting internships for their employees to learn from the Witness Protection Unit witness protection best practices in South Africa. The Witness Protection Unit also routinely cooperates with international organizations such as the International Criminal Court for Rwanda, the International Criminal Court, which is the former Yugoslavia, and the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. The various business units here will make their inputs, which I want to believe will be in detail to enable members to ask relevant questions. In the year 2006 and 7 financial year, the NPA moved past the deep self-examination or understand phase of its renewal and started developing the actual plans and processes that will transform the organization from within. At the same time, the NPA needs to build capacity and fill the vacant posts that are hampering it in fulfilling its duties. The NPA is a young but astonishingly high-profile organization due to the intrinsic nature of its responsibilities. Its strength lies in four principles that guide its work, namely independence, accountability, integrity, as well as transparency. When it comes to challenges, Chair, I want to say the following, that the NPA has had to deal with morale-draining battles recently. Our emphasis to be laid on the word morale-draining. There has been attacks from various angles around handling or non-handling of certain matters. These issues have really become serious challenges to be addressed and at the same time being expected to continue with our core function. What I'm trying to say here is that we have these challenges that are pulling us to one side, and at the same time we are expected to carry on with our work as if everything is normal. And like I said, I want the emphasis to be laid on the morale draining part of it. That even if we would like to do the best that we can, of course we are trying to do that. This battering and attacks from certain quarters is not doing us any good, and that is not doing any good also to the nation we are expected to serve. To mention that some is the prosecution of the Jacob Zuma matter and that of the National Commissioner of Police, Commissioner Jacob Sulebi. It has been suggested in certain quarters here that these matters, it suggested around these matters that the NPA is being used or manipulated politically by individuals for personal gain. We have not as yet, I want to put this on record, had that confrontation that this is what you're doing. But one cannot ignore that which is in circulation in the media, that these things are suggested against the NPA. Now, these are some of the things that can lead to real moral draining incidents. The NPA is further being criticized for political smear campaigns. This we heard in the report, this we read about in the papers. But I'm not saying, and I want again just to go on record that I'm not saying that we have been told that we have been done. But the media runs with such allegations which to the organization do not augur well at all, and they are not in the best interest of the functions of the organization. The suspension of the National Director of Public Prosecution, Advocate Lucy Pigoli, had also a negative impact on the morale of the NPA community. Two other senior members of the NPA, namely Advocate Dawood Adam, a question was asked and responded to recently, and Advocate Brent Ferreira are also on suspension. Advocate Adam is the special director charged and leading the Office of Witness Protection, while Advocate Brent Ferreira is the DPP in the Free State province. Undoubtedly, the absence of these two senior officials impacts negatively on the core function of the organization. Yet we do have measures in place that are taking care of of both these areas of operation. But I want to go back to the question of morale. You can have a person to say you are acting in this capacity, but there are people that this person finds within that unit whose morale you also have to deal with at the same time. And while you are dealing with that, compromising service delivery cannot be the ignored. Despite what is being said, both in the media and sometimes in circles, in certain quarters, what is perceived and published in the media, the NPA is still continuing to do work with integrity. And I want to put it on record that the NPA will still continue to do that despite all of these difficulties. And that for as long as we do have a government on our side, you know, giving us the necessary support in doing our work, we shall be able to push forward.
Thank you very much. Quick questions to the general overview of Steve, Imam, Len, Imam Beirut.
Chair, thank you. And again, commendations to the NPA and all the units for the incredible work that you're doing under very difficult circumstances. It's a great concern to us that we continually hear of the allegations that are being made against the NPA. This is not something new. Every year we have it, and it's from our side in particular, we need to address it. I've addressed it before in Parliament, hands off our prosecutors, from whatever political angle. And I think we need to send a very strong message out. They are at the forefront, Chair, of the fight against crime. We cannot continue to have moral draining, as you say, incidents. We are aware that there are incidents that happen and we'll be engaging the DSO and that, but the NPA as a unit, we need to come out very strongly and say, hands off the NPA. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, the acting head has been lamenting, you know, the move of good. The acting head has been lamenting the move of good prosecutors within the unit, you know, moving towards the magistrate. I mean, you commented on, you know, how can we, for example, you know, just move some of the expertise which we have in this pocket of excellence which we have in front of us here to other parts of the criminal justice system. Why should we lament that? Where do you think this should come from? I mean, we need good investigators. They have been trained well by you. We need good prosecutors. They have been trained very well by you, right? And we need good magistrates. So this is where they should come from. Where else do they have to come from?
Thank you, Chief. I want to endorse, first of all, what Steve was saying. I think he said it very well. But what worries me is, except for the conditions in the magistrate's court and also the asset forfeiture unit, you haven't met the target that you set for yourself in your strategic plan. Now, my question is, how are you going to address that?
Then also, what is the status of the planned rollout of the Tshibela Court Center? Thank you, Chair.
I would think that maybe there is misunderstanding from the people out there about the functions of the NPA. The other Chapter 9 institutions make use of radios, media. They even go to the community to talk about the work that they are doing. So what I want to know, is it out of your limit to go out to the people and tell the people exactly what you are doing? Or is it against the proclamation of the NPA?
Two quick ones. What programs are in place in terms of awaiting trial, detainees, and to try to speed up those cases? and the impact of the new sexual offences legislation. You know, of course, maybe it's too early to say, but you know, our prosecutors trained, is it working? Any feedback?
Thank you, sir. I will direct the majority of them, the business unit yes, are here. I want them to deal with them, yeah, to respond to them, and that will assist them also when they come to the press. The question of the targets, I'll leave that to the acting head of NPS to respond there to.
Comrade Dennis Bloom from the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services. He's here in his capacity as chair of that committee. And he's free to ask any questions you want to, as he knows. Yet another prison, you know. Swoops on them. You know, he's learned from you quite a bit, from your DSO unit in particular. He swoops on them, you know, at CNN and Sky Al Jazeera and Sky TV and so on. Maybe you guys should learn a bit from him. And it relates to the question Mama Slawe asked.
Thank you, sir. The question on target, the question on ATG, awaiting task process, detainees, I'll leave to the business unit of NPS. The question on the TTC, I will also leave that to Dr. Silas Ramayike, who is representing SOCA. I'll deal only with the issue of NPA not going out to the people to tell, the so-called go tell. We do that, Mewaka. We do go out to the community, we go and address the community, we inform them what we are about. We even, in the past, have set aside days we call community days, wherein members of the community will come into specified courts and get explanations, and we tell them who we are and that kind of thing. We do some kind of outreach program into the community, and this is ongoing. Thank you.
Chairman Jefferson, to the committee. First of all, let me introduce the NPS team that I have here. First and foremost, we've got Advocate General Nicky Cox. Advocate Nicky Cox is the head of the NPS, the Director of Prostitution in the Western Cape. There he is. And then we've got Advocate Trish Matke. Advocate Trish Matke is one of the Deputy Directors of Prostitution at head office. Trish. There's Trish. And then we've got Advocate Marlis Botkita and Yannis Kett. They are to my right. They are our statisticians. They capture our information and reduce it to the figures that I'm just about to share with you now. This is a very, very lengthy report, and I'm sure members of the committee have been given it. It goes to some 32 slides. And I want to presume that those slides also coupled with the annual report. For me to go through these slides individually. So what I plan to do with your permission, Chair, is to flesh out what I call our key presentation of our case. And then having done that, I will go through some of the slides and move on to some details in terms of data in the report.
Chair, I want to protect my
The point of it is that we are not looking at our tax
But one of the reasons was the soccer research team are also in the process of developing what we call a monitoring and evaluation system.
In other words, they fully intended to monitor and evaluate as well as possibly the present delivery data for the developer. So I think we want to be very careful. Is sort of expanding without the system. That's important because one must remember that it's a secondary migration of one must take care of. And this is what distinguishes, for example, the other factors from the rest of the nature
And the long run situation has been drawn out, and we are engaged with Monica and the others. Whether in fact dealing with the whole question of secondary implementation. And I think one of the tools that we have to do that the effect was drawn out very well. I think we will also try to have a question about rolling out very fast. We don't want to problem is, if you do not produce the same experience that the victim is experiencing, you're not going to gain any benefit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Initially, you speak about the issue of racism. Racism obviously remains a very big challenge for the country in terms of the general criminalization of poverty and the impact that it has largely on children. What we have done, which has been spreading for the last few years, is the appointment of senior nation prosecutors in each of the provinces who are responsible for, from the NCA, who are responsible for the management of nations in that particular province. They are also responsible for the management of specialized nation prosecutors who have been appointed as nationally, and there are a number of those, and still in the process of voting on that. And they have come together with the maintenance investigators. The NPA has also prepared a maintenance delivery project, which is focused very specifically on the delivery issues around maintenance. That's the key priority area within the NPA. And we have had a lot of resources and energy to improving the process match for both civil and criminal aspects of maintenance. The national prosecutors are also responsible for dealing with representations from the public. And I think this matter saying that in the previous financial year, more than 25,000 representations or queries, inquiries, in relation to maintenance matters have been dealt with. So although there are many, many inquiries that come forward, there are a number that are being dealt with by the media. Maybe just to add to the issue of which we did, in the next financial year, there was a plan going out for additional 12 together, and those have been identified according to a number of criteria, amongst which would be very high emerging rates, the numbers of incidents that are multiple units together and identified by their first 12 to bring them on, and we'll obviously be available to your consideration as well. In terms of maybe I just quickly also about the new Section 10 for that, that is obviously came into operation in December of last year. It is new, obviously, and it's a little early maybe to say exactly what the impact of it is. But just from the NPA side, what we have done is we have drafted and distributed and are using all of the actions, which is the charges in relation to all the new sections that have been created. There are, as you well know, there are a number of new interventions that have been created. We have draft directives. We obviously need to have for you within the next 6 months a online directive, because we have already in place a number of directives that we've done. Our biggest challenge at the moment is training prosecutors on the Section 10 today. We've done a lot of work around it already. We have given test training material, and in the process of rolling out training, we will carefully train our specialized prosecutors in the dedicated section of course in our regional prosecutors, and then obviously we'll roll out to everyone. But it is definitely a very big challenge. I think by and large it's been welcomed by prosecutors, which obviously depended the nature of the sensor is quite dramatically.
It's to do mainly with the challenges the NPA has, the morale training, battering, which is very evocative. I think most of us in this committee understand what you're saying. But it's also necessary for us to say that the NPA needs to also look at itself. and ask whether it itself hasn't contributed to some of the problems that it currently has. For example, a matter I raised with you fleetingly in a different situation, and I've asked the researcher to actually look into this. There are examples of people who don't know they're being investigated, and articles will appear in the press. They don't know that they're being investigated, and this takes place 4 years or so before the case is brought to a court, and in some cases it doesn't seem it's ever brought to a court. The consequences for these people, once it's in the newspapers and so on, is devastating and unfair. And obviously, some of the criticisms of the NPA are also very understandable. I don't know enough. I'm not a lawyer, as I think those of you know me know. But it looks credible when somebody says to me, it has nothing to do with who the person is. It's to do with it being announced in the press that a certain person, on the 28th of December, I think it was, is now going to be taken to court, and this is the date of the trial, and so on. I'm talking as a non-lawyer. I'm talking as somebody who's reasonably, I think, it's my own sense of myself, reasonably balanced. Outside this meeting, there's no way I stand on issues. There's nothing to hide. That's nothing to do with the committee. As an individual, you want to know where I stand on the issues? Ask me outside this meeting. I consider myself reasonably balanced in as things go in the movement that I belong to. And it struck me as very odd that these things happen. I think that the question that Mama Shlava raises is correct. You answered, obviously in a quick way, that look, these are things we do. But I think it's the issue of what's the outcome. I think the NPA also needs to do more to win back credibility. Now, whether the NPA is mainly responsible for its own problems, or whether it's only partly responsible for its own problems, we in the NPA will also defer. But we'll all agree that in some sense or other, the NPA is responsible for its own problems. We don't know to what percentage. But whatever the situation, it seems to me that something has to be done by the NPA in a more vigorous, more rigorous, more consistent way to win back credibility. But I also think that this committee and Parliament as a whole has a responsibility. We cannot have a situation where people constantly batter the NPA. And you are accountable to this committee, and we need to apply our mind commitment. And we need to look at what we say in the report, which is something the researchers can't say. We will appreciate that paragraph or two in the report about how we manage our responsibility to ensure that you are able to fulfill your role, that you are not unfairly challenged by politicians, but you are fairly challenged by politicians. And this committee should be used to do that. This is where, if people have got issues, they should come. In reviewing your annual report, members of Parliament should come. Maybe what we need to do is advertise more that we are having you before us, and let the members come and raise in an open forum their issues, and you reply. This is Parliament. This committee needs to be used in that way. Rather than, I mean, take Bulalani in Bangladesh here. It would be wrong for him to stand in a branch meeting. He's an activist, okay? He's a populist as well, like most of us. Ah, even me. Okay, take me. It'd be absurd for me to, in Ward 36 branch, in Umsunduzi, Maritzburg, to attack the NPA when I actually chair the committee where you're appearing, you know? So, I think we also need to look at how Parliament needs to assist, because whatever the situation, whatever the spectrum we belong to within this broad movement that we belong to, we cannot have this moral, loss of morale and people fleeing the NPA. It's not in our long-term interest. It's not. Now, I don't know how we manage this thing, but we in the study group, Bulalani, will talk about it. We will craft appropriate paragraphs, Christine and Sue Ann say, just leave the paragraphs blank, we will attend to it from, we will craft it. You can summarize what I'm saying, and any member is free, from the ANC in particular, to say what you want to say, but that is a general thrust. One, that the NPA is not innocent, so to speak, completely. But two, and the NPA needs to come out more clearly about remedial action, particularly about these links you know, they're just not on. I don't know if it happens anywhere else. I've asked the researchers to independently help us. Three, that, whatever the weaknesses of the NPA, we cannot as politicians, especially members of parliament, I'm addressing myself to members of parliament, in our other forums and structures, to contribute towards is not right, in my view, and I hope the view of the majority. But I also think we need to reach out as parliament, and it's this committee that has to do it. Maybe in the House or something, in the budget debate, maybe one of us needs to, when you think about it, address this issue, that we need to make genuinely hardworking people who are not politically biased, who are just serving the state, who are strengthening the criminal justice system, which is a challenge as it is, we need to reach out to them and tell them this committee wants to tell them that we appreciate their hard work, we need them, and we want to support them more. Let's think of who we are doing that, Pulalani and others. We will think about that. But I also want to say finally, this is my own view for what it's worth, and I'm not saying I'm speaking on behalf of the committee as a whole, but hey, we haven't had time to organize our thoughts collectively with the ANC in this committee, but we will do it in our report. I really think it's going to be an important test of character of all of us. You, us as a committee, the executive, in particular the Ministry of Justice and the Department of Justice, the country as a whole, how we manage the challenges that we are having. It is one of the most important tests of the character and the nature of the transformation process that's underway. If we mismanage it, I think all of us will bear the consequences. If we manage it properly, I think it will be an enormous leap forward. So it's a test. And many other countries, developing countries, I suspect, I don't know this area very well. And it might sound, you know, I think I've thought it to myself quite frankly, platitudinal. But I can't summon to my aid, because I'm not an expert in this area, summon to my aid more precise words that are necessary beyond the platitudes I'm offering. It is this, that actually I think, just like I think about the ESCOM crisis, I know that members of the opposition will howl. But the truth is, as unnecessary as some of the things about the ESCOM crisis are, and this parliament must also take responsibility. We can't blame just ESCOM and the ANC, NEC and the executive for telling ESCOM don't generate new electricity. You know, the private sector is going to do it. We also, as a committee, as a parliament responsible, we didn't do oversight role properly, not use the committee of just emerged from public enterprise. But the truth is, on the whole, you know what strikes me as a concern? This is also a challenge. And we can triumph over it, you know. I think we've got the potential to do so over the power cuts and so on. And maybe in a few years we might sound absurd, but maybe it's a good thing it happens, you know, because if it happens 1 year down the road, you'd be divested, but now we can rescue it. Similarly, I think the issues that you are addressing are not just about the NPA. They are a symptom of the broader transformation processes and the challenges around it. They're not about just ANC infighting and alliance issues. They're about the course of the transformation, where we are going. And if we manage the process, we'll be strengthened as a country and we'll shape the contours of our transformation for a very long time to come. So I wish you well, as a chair, and I wish all of us here well, because we all need to play our part in emerging from the challenges we currently have in a way that strengthens our country. Now, much of what I've said is platitudinal, but I don't really know what more to say. The thrust of what I'm saying is, hey, you're not innocent, but hey, we ain't innocent either. And you know what? It is both of our interests and the interests of the other stakeholders we deal with that we work together and see how we manage the next 2 years or so, because that's going to determine for many years to come the nature of our transformation, the nature of the society, the quality of the democracy. Okay, anybody want to say anything? Okay, let's have Dennis Bloom. He hasn't said a word.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. But I want to follow up what you have said about the contribution of the ATEX. I just want to say, and I want to pose a question to Mr. Michel about this. You see, the leaks contribute to this ATEX and this unnecessary ATEX. You see, sensitive information is leaking. Before Unit carrying is being charged. I'm not saying you're going to be charged, but I'm making an example. That's sensitive. Yeah, no, we will look into his case. We will look into his case. But you see, and now the person who is a suspect will try and defend and respond, and then there will come a case. I'm asking the Mr. Michel, what are you doing to address the problem of leaks? You see, it's a very sensitive, you are dealing with very sensitive matters. And this leak is also a threat to national security. Because you are not dealing with ordinary criminals, ordinary cases. Before the case will go to court, then this criminal will already know, because somebody, wrong elements in the NPA is leaking this information. We must look into that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to push on something more practical and on the ground here. Regarding maintenance, a year ago, Project Iskondo, there must be quite a lot of time. I study couples who belong to very objectors who are by the children out there. Are we continuing with this local reform? So maybe we something about this because the major thing they get to know is a few years ago. The program was recently developed.
my focus will be on the issue of comprehensive branding, because you have different units in the NPA who are branded differently from the mother body, that is the NPA. For instance, if you take the DSO as a brand, it is much more recognizable than the NPA as a whole. I think it would be important that we have a comprehensive branding of the NPA as an institution. If you can look at that, a comprehensive branding strategy. And then also, the other question that I would like to ask is, how are you using ICT to increase efficiency of our prosecutors? I am aware that you are using ICT to increase administration and operational efficiency. But my question will be based on how are you using the ICT for research. If I'm a prosecutor in Abuja, can I be able to work from home and do research? Do you have such facilities that I can be able to work from home and be able to do research?
I wanted to just address the issue of leaks, because this is something that has been thrown at the MDA a lot. And now let me perhaps start off by saying that I think a few years ago the MDA was not probably as stringent on this issue as it should have been. But I think over the last 3 years the MDA has really taken extraordinary measures to try and deal with this issue. And I will talk about some of those measures. But I also think it's important for us to understand that when a criminal investigation has been done about a case that may be regarded as a sensational case, you know, where everybody would be very interested to know that it has happened. An investigation involves talking to people. It means going to banks to get bank statements of a specific person. The bank officials know about it. The warrants that are being that get those things have to say why you want it. Witnesses have to be interviewed. Searches happen. So an investigation by its very nature means that other people are being communicated with. And so I think it's important to understand that there's a difference, that there are things that are within the unique knowledge of the organization. There are things that become within the knowledge of other people because they are being asked questions or they're being asked to supply evidence. So it's very difficult to have an investigation that is a secret investigation, because then it is not an investigation, because you won't get evidence if you are not engaging with other people. I think the NPA has tried very hard. We have done over the last few months, we've done on specific leaks, we've done investigations within the organization. We've examined all the phone records in the organization. We've examined people's individual cell phone records. People have been subjected to lie detector tests to really get the message out. We've made all our employees sign an oath of secrecy to get the message out to them that this is completely unacceptable. So while I can't say that, you know, in the initial days, I think there were people who were, perhaps when they were dealing with a very exciting matter, would talk to the friends, maybe the spouses, the families, whatever. I think we've really gone out of our way over the last few years to ensure that that does not happen. And that when it specifically happens, that it is investigated, whether it is really an NTA leak or not. Because even some of the things that are attributed in the newspapers to NTA leaks are not, or NTA sources. When you go to the newspapers, the specific journalists, it emerges, well, it was told that this comes from the NTA. So I do want to just try and give members of this committee the assurance that we have done almost everything that is humanly possible, including spying on our own employees, to ensure that we get to the bottom of it. But I don't think that one can ever expect in a criminal investigation on a matter of high public interest that people who are approached, however much we say to them, this is sensitive, don't talk to others, that it will not happen. I think in some specific recent cases it's become more complicated. The Kebble saga, let me mention that. There are investigative journalists who have investigated Mr. Kebble for years. Before any NTA people spoke to witnesses, most of them had been interviewed by journalists already. There was a certain former AXA manager that you have read about who's done his own investigation. He's gone and taken statements, affidavits from people. So when witnesses are being interviewed by the Scorpions in this specific instance, they've already talked to others. We know they've signed statements with other people. So it's extremely difficult in an environment like that, where, you know, everything that's happening is big and hot news, for the NTA to, you know, to be able to assure that none of this will appear in the newspaper. What I can tell you is if you look at all the stories, for example, that appeared in those, there is very little of the actual information that was only in the NTA's knowledge. There is nothing of that information that appeared in those. You go and look at the things that are now in the public eye, in the Salebi court application and so on, you'll see there's a lot of things that have never appeared in them. And those are the things that were uniquely in our knowledge. They were things that had not, did not depend on witnesses or things like that. So I think it is important that we just have some perspective on this question. When you set up any agency that is going to investigate important cases, whether they organize crime, corruption, big rape cases, whatever, those things, whether they're police cases, scorpion cases, they end up somehow or other in the newspapers because there are witnesses who think this is a really important story. There are journalists who are interested in it. So I think I want to give this committee the assurance that, you know, a few years ago we sat down as the NTA when the new national director came in particular. And he said to us, this is the single biggest threat against the NTA, the perception that there are these leaks from the NTA. And Advocate Pacoli has really insisted on driving this message through the organization, ensuring that we take the measures that we can take. But that can never mean, unfortunately, that nothing will ever appear in the newspaper. I also think that we would really welcome the suggestion by the chairperson, you You know, there are many stories, allegations that are made in the press by people who are accused and think that by throwing lots of mud somehow their cases will go away, by judgments that happen in court where people say all sorts of things about that without ever having actually been in court and listened to what has happened there. We would really welcome a more activist role by this committee. Now, this is the place where we come and account. If something is wrong, if we are being accused of something wrong, it would really be good if this committee calls us and says, you're being criticized for a sentence or for a plea bargain or whatever. Come and explain it to us. It's your role, it's your right to do it. But you know, we see too often, you know, I think one of our problems at the moment is it's not for us to go out and tell the NTA out there. You know, it is it's a difficult position. We are often in position of confidential information. We don't want to talk about that too much. But I think if the committee were to come and say to us, come in and talk to us about it. What happened here? Ask us the tough questions. We will come and answer. But I think it's also important that the NTA at the moment needs some political support. Now, I think it's true. My law lecturer said, no democracy knows how strong it is until you've been through a real test. Whether your institution survives. It's not nice to go through the test, I can tell you that. But I do think that, you know, the committee also has a role in ensuring that what is said about the NTA is valid, that the facts are put out in the public domain. We cannot participate in the political discussions and debates that go on here. But I think this committee is well placed because it can get itself informed on those issues. And there are politicians here. It's your role to participate in those debates, not our role as public servants. So, you know, I think we would really welcome the suggestion that you made that this committee does become a bit more involved in all these debates that rage out there at the moment about the
end. Equally, you can always phone me and say, look, you have. This issue has arisen in the public domain. We are getting battered. We would like to answer to the structure we answer to. So you can also ring me. Well, you can ring me or you can ring me or, you know, we may. So I think that's fair. I also think that you can also, we can talk outside this meeting, take up in a more concrete way some of the other general points I made. For example, we, you know, the morale that you were speaking about, it's not in anybody's interest. You know, not in the interest of the majority party either. We want a strong NPA. We want an NPA that our crime levels are too high. Our national democratic transformation is not possible in a situation of a terrain like this, you know. And we flow from our own ethos, you know, that if you don't ensure the safety and security of people, we don't have peace and stability. What are the prospects of a major transformation? Very limited. So let's put it to this. We also saying to you, you have the right to say, hey, do your oversight role properly, call us in. So let's do that, and let's move on. I'm sure Dennis will have replies to that, and there are obviously things you would want to reply to, and with the policy lunch we're going to have in a moment, maybe you can have exchanges over that. Let's move on then.
My name is Cora Greenberg. I am the Acting Executive Manager for Strategy in our organization. I'd like to deal with the two questions you raised about the internet connectivity of our prosecutors, both in official hours and afterwards, and I'm also going to deal with the brand building. As regards the information management in our organization, we realize with our strategy review, the new direction we want to take, how critical it is for our prosecutors to have the right information at the right time and relevant information that they require. So our IMSC, which is our IT section within corporate services, in consultation and in close collaboration with our partners and the DOJ, etc., are developing various systems. We have what we call a PSED that allows our prosecutors access to an expert database that we're developing that will tell you if you have any area that you need to call a specific witness or if the defense is calling a specific witness, and you would like to know who you can consult in that regard to enable you to cross-examine better, then that list is provided to you. We also have a list of all the legislation, user status available. Our libraries throughout the country, we have 25 at the moment. They are well-resourced for each of the librarians. They are mainly at our DPP offices. All our senior and top management down to the level of senior public prosecutor have laptops available to them that they take home, and 3G cards have also been made available to them. All processes within our delivery, which is the core function of our organization, in other words, the NPS and acceptance processes have been met and are available on both the internet as well as the internet to all our prosecutors. So should they, for example, have a problem with money laundering and have never done it before, they're able to access the internet, get the process. It's very, very simple. It's the lowest level of detail and allows them a step-by-step method of how to go about that. On our expert database, we're also going to include internal NPA experts with their telephone numbers, so that you can know that I can contact, for example, if I have a Marie, should I have a problem with a certain aspect of the law, etc. Obviously, with people being brought into the performance contract, you need to reward people for the sharing of knowledge, and we want to encourage people to actually share knowledge, but not to keep it within themselves. The key would be actually knowledge industry is a very important aspect for us. We've also made a move to identify the key handbooks that our prosecutors will be requiring, and in this year, the civilian handbook has also been made available to our prosecutors. So they have a toy and all the real basic things that you will need for those that do not have laptops to take to court with them and to actually do research. It's a much better thing than was a few years ago. And of course, if they do have internet connectivity, they can also use the dial-up in relation to that respect. Money, of course, does remain a concern for us in terms of our IT. We have an extremely limited budget, extremely dependent upon the DOJ and the IJS. In fact, they actually budget or provide us with the budget for most of our IT development. So it is an aspect we do raise that every year with National Treasury, but our budget is constantly not supplied sufficient for our demand that we actually have within this new developing area. And as you know, it's an increasing demand regularly. Then in terms of the branding of the NPA, we realized when we did our comprehensive review of our organization that we had actually what we called silos at that stage. And some areas of our organization were extremely good at branding themselves. And of course, the Scorpions of the ESO brand is a very, very strong brand. And it was very well developed for a very successful campaign in respect of that. And since 2005, we've made a concerted effort as our organization to make sure that we keep reminding the media of when there is action taken by the NPA, even if it is the Scorpions or as it's forfeited, that in fact this is an NPA
as many of those as possible to give obviously a high quality of service.
Although we have identified 12 areas for rollout in the next financial year, we have made previous with the two facilities with the objective of establishing 18 theaters by the year 2010. So that is for getting in the pipeline and we depend on funding and then obviously we can actually build in on those things.
Sections here, that is the sexual offences section, the domestic violence section, the maintenance section, as well as the child justice section. With respect to domestic violence and child justice, we haven't had so many challenges. With respect to domestic violence, the project Lada Zita, which brings together SOCA personnel, prosecutors, as well as traditional leaders, that has proven very, very successful. And I think basically the other issue that arose with respect to sexual offences was the new Sexual Offences Act that the Bronwyn has already dealt with. Other than that, Chairperson, I do not have any challenges that I would specifically wish to bring to the attention of the committee. Then again, with respect to the SCCU, our key target was increasing access of the SCCU services by rolling out two more offices and then the 5% increase in the number of cases finalized and then maintaining our conviction rate of
95%. In his overview, the acting NDPP has already referred to our consistent conviction rate of 95%. There are two key charges that we face to meet within the SDCU, and that was with respect to the 5% reduction in turnaround time from end to end, in other words, from the beginning of the matter up to the end of the matter. We have not been able to achieve that. On the contrary, there has been a 9% increase. So I'm merely pointing out to the target that we have not been able to reach, and then to provide, to give an explanation. And my colleague will assist with providing that explanation, which still remains a challenge for us. So that is the 5% reduction in the turnaround time. He said there's been an increase of 9%. And then the 5% reduction in the turnaround time from enrollment to end. On the contrary, there has been an actual increase of 34%. The next slide provides the main reasons why we could not reach our target. That is the net result of increased workload, that is the workload per prosecutor, and then constraints in finalizing investigations, and then the large number of continued vacancies in the staff, and lack of skills, and then the nature of some of the cases, they are more complicated, and then the rotation of magistrates. This results from the case flow management system, and I suppose that my colleague will deal with that when he presents on the MCS, but Chris Sudan can also address the problem that we experience with the case flow management system. And then also delay in the filling of posts, not only of prosecutors, but also of presiding officers. Other than that, Chairperson, there is no other matter that I wish to emphasize or bring to the attention of the committee. And then with respect to the TCLU, I think my colleague, the acting NDPP, has already spoken to that. There's just one matter that I wish to refer to. If you can just go to the, I think it's the previous slide that deals with guidance. That's the one. This matter has now been finalized. We reported on the matter during our previous report. We're currently assisting with initial legal assistance from Germany and Switzerland, assisting in the confiscatory order in respect of the sources of crime. And then we formulated the report to the International Atomic Energy Agency. And then the prosecutor who was involved in that, Chris McAdam, represented South Africa at the United Nations Nuclear Terrorism Workshop in Vienna. With respect to the missing persons, which is the other matter that I wish to bring to the attention of the committee, I think Advocate Nke has already addressed that. Just the two highlights that I might want to mention, the excavations and exhumations. The one specific one happened in Mamelodi in Gauteng. The remains of an MK member, Luke Martin Wooder, who died in police custody in September 1963, was successfully located in an unmarked field in Mamelodi Cemetery. And then his remains were identified through DNA testing. That's correct. And then the second significant one is the post-Chalmers farm cleared up in the Eastern Cape, where investigative excavations were conducted, and these were successful. The bent bone fragments of several individuals and associated ballistic items were recovered from the soil septic tanks. They are currently undergoing intensive forensic examination to establish whether these are the remains of the PEPCO 3, Tim Kulu, Toksima Daga, and five other individuals. And I think those are the major highlights.
With respect to witness protection, there isn't anything specific that I wish to bring to the attention of the committee, save for what my colleague has already mentioned. The current situation is not conducive to the proper and effective care of witnesses. Currently, with the assistance of my colleagues, I have taken direct responsibility, which is not the ideal situation, because ideally you need the head or an acting head of the program, and you also need either an operations head. So currently we're doing it what we can. It's not an ideal situation, but we do hope that we will very soon get an appointment. So those are the issues that I think.
It's the best witness protection program in the world. Is that correct? I read that somewhere in your document. You give me so much of documentation, by the way. Next time, send it 1 month ahead. You know. I've read half of it, but the issue is our researchers read everything, and we will share, we will actually, by the time we do our report in a bit, close to 100% of it. But in somewhere you say, I can't remember whether it's your report, a published annual report or what, that we are the first best in the world. Is that not correct? I'll just ask you. There's some organization.
Chairperson, we are a member of the expert witness group that is affiliated to the United Nations, and I think there is an evaluation, some kind of evaluation that is done by the structures that
very impressive. Hands up those of you who knew that, or even suspected
that. I'm sure, Chairperson, that can actually be validated by research, because in terms of the framework and the model that is used, the form that we have developed to determine which witnesses need to go on to the program. And those have actually now been adopted by other... We have also assisted other countries in developing their own...
In our report, correct? Let's commend them, you know, for that. We're not going to ask you to investigate how it arrived at, what criteria was used, how many countries were looked at, and whether it's a friend of Advocate of Share that made the final decision. We don't check that. We believe you. It's great. Let's mention positive things too that they do. Right, questions, please.
Our National Prosecuting Service, there are two problems which we have and which we witness also. First of all, our court rules is tantamount.
Right.
Secondly, it's the waiting trial prison. And particularly...
Directly with the input now.
It's not
the NPS input, it's dealing with the specific issues, so called. Let's deal now. We're going to come to NPS tomorrow, Tuesday. We're dealing specifically with this area. We'll come back to you. Okay. Maslava, come in.
Thank you, Chair. Emanating from a statement that you made, that is management of transformation. I'm just listening now to this report and just think about this missing pattern project. If this thing could be, you know, if you could go to the radio and speak about it, the impact that it would have on the people. So I'm trying to say that the things that were raised here when we're speaking about the management of transformation are very important. And this thing of outreach, in outreach programs, are very important too. And it will help you, you know, in this situation of your low morale, because people will be understanding exactly the hard work that you have been doing. Can you imagine so many excavations that have been made, excavation and excavations that have been made? People don't know about them. It's only the people who live behind who know about these things.
ordinary nurses and even some other people who don't read the newspapers don't know about these things. So I'm trying to say that maybe this outreach program is very important.
I was a bit surprised, Willie, that she understands the reply, because actually, you're right. I mean, you're not in the business of branding. I mean, you're a prosecuting authority, and elsewhere in the world, I don't know where this is. And given the bad vibes, let's put it that way, a significant...
without undermining your role as an independent prosecutor, in any case, the CSO would be better in this country. So I agree with what you're saying. I don't put it in style of trying to but I'm sure if you would have advised my translation, you would have knocked out my comments. So I understand you didn't mean what, how you came across.
And I think you probably agree with them more than seemed to be the case. We don't expect you to brand yourself like a pop star. I mean, that's part of, but you, branding, I think, is used in a very specific context, in a very specific conjunction. And I think she's absolutely right. But if we agree to disagree, let's disagree. But for now, that's our view. Okay.
Chair, we still have approximately 20 minutes. I was thinking maybe we could squeeze in AFU. It will not take more than 15 minutes. If there are no questions to end the session.
I wanted to just mention that again, you know, we're going through these so quickly, and these units have done remarkably good work. And I want to just emphasize, I have read the report, I'm aware of the good work that you've done. All those cases that are mentioned, I mean, that nuclear case is huge. And we need to be aware that we are worldwide leaders in the prosecution of nuclear cases. You know, we're slipping over these things that but I think we just need to let the members know, let the NPA know that we are aware and we have read the report.
By the time we read the report, I will have read everything, certainly. And the property rates bill, I read personally something like 7,000 pages. So it's not the end of the world. We will read it. She said it was too much to do in the last 2 weeks. I've read about a third of what you've given. Now, Christine, can we note in our report, Suan, that, for example, see branding, you could slide, it's a bit difficult to praise yourself, but let me tell you, everybody else that comes here praises themselves enormously. You're more restrained. You could have said to us what Steve said. I didn't know that we were leaders in this thing.
And you need to correct it. And you need to, when you talk about this report, you should say for us. Okay? That's another way of speaking out. You know, maybe what we also think about really, we should have
that, hey, we were leaders here.
Shake matters. so we have some other work to do as well. Chair, can I say that for the AFU, we traditionally had two major objectives. I think most members of the committee are familiar. So one is to ensure that we do more and more asset forfeiture cases, that we really get and make a real impact on crime. And the second is to develop the law, which is a new and still relatively complicated law, to make it clear what it means and make it easier for other prosecutors to do. Generally, I think the AFU's had a very good year in 06-07. You will see, on the right-hand side that we've exceeded almost all our targets. In terms of the number of cases we've done, we were well above target. In terms of the value of the new seizures, that's frozen assets, we had by far our best year ever when we froze about 1.3 billion rand worth of assets. A lot of that, I may say, is thanks to Mr. David King, who gave us about 1 billion of the 1.4 billion. In terms of the cases completed, the value of those cases slightly below target, and the funds into CARA, we were also a little bit below target. I mentioned some of our biggest cases here, David King, the other one was Mr. Delford, I'm sure he's no relation to the honorable member. But it's a matter that we worked with SARS involving a customs fraud of over 300 million rand. And we found about nearly 100 million rand worth of assets in South Africa. CARA, there are some big deposits still coming into CARA. In fact, this year, the current year in which we are in is already one of our, is our best year ever about that. And we're still waiting for Mr. Sheikh, the Constitutional Court, willing to give us about 44 million rand as well. I think what was important in the year under discussion is that for the first time also some payments were made out of the Criminal Assets Recovery Account. You know that there's a special cabinet committee that makes recommendations to cabinet about it. It has two mandates. The one is to give money for crime, to combat crime. The second mandate is to give money to organizations that assist victims. Most of the funds in the first disbursement went to organizations that fight crime, to the police and the NPA, SARS to some extent as well. And that was because it was somewhat difficult to, I think the law contemplates that funds will also go to NGOs, but when the committee started looking at the logistics of that, it became quite complicated. So there are probably 30,000 NGOs out there who think that they should get money from CARA. And you know, unless one has a very proper selection process and a fair process to allocate funds, it would be very difficult. You know, we may do more harm than good because there would be too many people who feel that they were better qualified to receive funds. So I think Cabinet took a cautious approach the first time round and said, we do need to look properly at how funding would go to NGOs. And I think if members of the committee have any ideas on how this can be done, I think that really would be valuable. But Cabinet did give allocate some money in terms of that mandate to the Department of Social Development to fund the NGOs. So they funded a number of rape crisis and battered women centers. Money was given to SAPS for installing one-way windows in police stations so that rape victims particularly can do ID parades without being seen by the alleged perpetrators, and also the sexual offences unit and the missing persons unit benefited from the funding. In terms of the litigation, we had a pretty good year. We aimed to get 36 judgments in the year. We only had 33, so we were a bit below target, but that's not only in our hands. It depends how much people want to litigate with us. We had 3 cases in the Constitutional Court, 4 cases in the Supreme Court of Appeal. our success rate in our judgment in the last year was really good. We won 81% of the judgment in court.
Our target is 57%. Just some of the just a general comment is that on the next slide is that we do distinguish between our general success rate in cases, which is over 85%.
In most cases there isn't a written judgment at the end, we just win. So when we're talking about our success rate in judgment, it's really about cases where we are litigating, and often we're litigating on a particular issue. For example, can we take the wife's property when the wife and husband are married in community of property and things like that? So the judgments do not necessarily reflect on whether we've won the whole case or not. But just to give you some indication, in our first 4 years, we won less than 50% of the judgments that we contested. That's changed quite a lot in the last 4 years now, where we're winning about 73%. That's
partly because we've taken a lot of cases
to the Constitutional Court and Appeal Court, and that's really settled now.
Some of the important judgments, and here at the time, I'm not really going to go through this too much. But those are
the Constitutional Court cases that we're dealing with. The Prophet was a Groundhog case that we won. Abson Fraser was a case involving a drug dealer who also owed money to ASPA, and we wanted to take all his property. We were happy to say that the court should have some discretion to give other creditors some of the money. Mohandran was probably our most important case of the year. It dealt with an illegal casino in KwaZulu-Natal. The issue was this an instrument of crime? The Concourse agreed that it was. But it felt by a very narrow majority of 6-5 that taking the whole building was not proportional to the seriousness of the offense involved. Yeah. I think this case, to be frank, has caused us some difficulties. It only affects, I don't want to overstress the difficulties, it affects a very small proportion of the cases we do. But I think acting against fixed properties that become a sort of base for crime in an area, whether it's a drug house, an illegal casino where all sorts of people gather and often other crimes spring from it, has been
part of the more pervasive. This has made our work more difficult, particularly because it means that we have to do a lot more work, and that the Constitutional, or the majority of the Constitutional Court, seem to require us that we have to prove some arbiters to organize the crime. And that potentially will take us more work. It's something that we are constantly coming to this committee with, but somewhat to clarify the law itself.
In the Appeal Court, those are some of our important judgments. In view of the time, I'm not going to talk about those now. Just to say that generally, the successes, and I think the AFU has done pretty well over the past few years, so I think our successes really has been a large part because other organizations are working very well with us. AFU does not investigate cases, neither does it prosecute cases. We depend on others to do their job properly so that we can do our job. So, just to give you some sort of overview, with the police we probably do about 90% of our cases, and they account for about generally about 30% of the value of the cases. Under the police we include the SCPU.
For a relatively small amount of the cases, we do about 10%, but you'll see here that in terms of the value of those cases, they do deal with some of the much more significant cases.
indicated with SARS. We've got a very healthy working relationship with both the customs and the revenue arms of SARS. And in the NTS in particular, we've put a lot of effort over in the last year to ensure that we picked up cases which may not have been referred to us by the police or the Scorpion, but if they do land in court, that they get referred to us. So generally, I think our success is in a large measure ascribed to how well we've been supported and worked with other organizations. I think in terms of our challenges that we face as Assist Force for the Church, although we've grown to about 100 people now, plus another 50 police detectives, I think there is still a lot more work to be done in South Africa before we can really say that we're taking the profit out of crime. We have some time to go. And so I think one of our biggest challenges is how we grow the capacity to do this kind of work. And that's ultimately is a lot to do about money. But Chair, I think that is the major issues that we wanted to raise with the committee. I think generally we've done pretty well in the year, but there are still big challenges for us in terms of expanding our work into the future.
Christian, please. Steve, Lynn, Gilbert, Imam.
Chair, this is just a general question and it might not be appropriate for an answer at this stage. But both the SIU and the AFU really refer to working with the DSO. And at a certain stage, we would like, when a proposed legislation is on the table, what are the implications that we have for these particular units? I don't think that we'll be able to pass the answer that now, but
at fine. Advocate Chair can imply. I think we should take that question, because I've got that as one of my questions as well. How would it impact on them?
Thank you.
And we can take it down. There's no problem. Who's next? Imam?
Chapter this is quite clear that you know, the asset property unit is doing pioneering work, right, in the field of criminal justice here, right, and it they lean very heavily on certain pieces of legislation, right. I think some time ago, you know, Willie has mentioned that there's a need to amend to make it, you know, to capacitate them better, in order to make it easier for them to do what they have to do. Right? Maybe, I don't think it should in detail, you know, say what it is, but maybe you should let us know what those pieces of legislation are, where the amendments should be done in order to facilitate, you know, the work of the advocacy unit.
What we could do is, you can answer in 1 minute, but you can write a paragraph around that and give it to Christine and Sue Ann. They'll give you the emails and so on. We must put it into our report. You see, I don't think we're going to consider your annual report. Can I just say this, Advocate Chair? You see, what we decide at this committee, and Willie will be impressed to know this, we're not a factory. We're not producing bills as commodities. And the Ministry agrees with us. We have to combine legislation and oversight. So our program for this last quarter of last year was towards finding a necessary balance between legislative and oversight responsibility. But this year, the program is going to be lots of legislation, little oversight, limited time. That's the reality. So our aim is that the new committee, hopefully, the last quarter of each year, even if it's 500,000 pieces of legislation, they're not going to proceed with that. They're going to consider the annual reports of each entity. We did 5 last year, and we're doing 2 now, and we finished 27. But this should really come at the last quarter of the last year. But at the same time, given this year, I don't think we're going to be sitting with annual reports in the last quarter of this year. So for this committee, our tenure comes to an end. That is why this report will be like an exit report for us. And the issues you are raising, you know, it's like very good. The Human Rights Commission came and lobbied us. We put it in the report. Now the Minister and Deputy Minister said, great, let's do the legislation. The Gender Commission came, the Legal Aid Board came. I want to tell you, I spoke with the Minister. The Legal Aid Guide is coming to us very shortly. So our reports are the basis for the action that the new committee would make. So you don't hesitate to, like, lobby us by putting in paragraphs. Remember, ultimately, we will adopt the report here. If we think you're asking for too much, we will remove it, you know. Well, you can ask for it, but we will say, we just noted. So they're going to contact Sue Ann and Christine and put that in. But let's have the third person whose hand was up, is Lynn Gilbert.
Thank you, Chair. I was curious how the amount that is paid over to CARA is determined.
On this particular input by ASU for now?
No.
Thank you, Chair. Let me deal with the questions in the reverse order. It's my typical one last. Just the money that goes into, just so you understand our process, our initial process is to freeze assets to keep it safe while the case is being litigated. So that's what we call the seizing or freezing of assets. Then when we have figures for completed cases, that's where the case has been litigated, the court has said so much must be confiscated or forfeited to the state. Those amounts are quite a lot less than the freezing because our big cases tend to be litigated for years and years. Philip's case, I think we've been litigating for 7 years now. It's been with me forever. We've got about 14 judgments in that case already, but the litigation continues. David King will probably be with for the next 15 years. So the big cases, I think you need to understand, while we may have frozen the money, people will spend a lot of money litigating us to stop us from taking it away finally. So once a court makes an order to freeze, to confiscate or forfeit the assets, that amount is then potentially available to be paid into CARA. But there are a couple of qualifications. The first is, where there's a genuine victim of the crime, we will ask the court to pay the victim of the crime. If the money was stolen from a bank, we will ask the money goes back to the bank. The state is not going to take that money. One of our cases, shop stewards and union officials helped to defraud their members of about 60 million rand. We had 60 million rand paid to 33,000 union members. So those cases will not end up with the money going to CARA. Third thing is, while the assets are being frozen, there are expenses that are incurred. We didn't, when the Limit Committee in its wisdom, when it adopted the law, decided it doesn't trust the state to look after assets, and I think that's probably a good idea. So curators from the private sector look after the assets while they are preserved. They have to be paid. The law says they get paid out of the proceeds of the frozen asset. So after those deductions to the victims, to the costs that were incurred by the curator, the balance of the money will go into CARA. So that's why you will see there's some stepping down at each stage of the process. But in this coming year, we've paid so far about 150 million rand into CARA, and as the next year, there will probably be another 60 million going in. So the amounts are increasing quite substantially. The second question was about the legal amendments. I think it would be really useful if the committee does take a little bit more proactive an approach to amendments that are in the pipeline. Because I think it's the pipeline that gets a bit frustrating at some stages of, you know, decisions get taken about what to prioritize or not. So our amendments have been lying there for some time, but others are prioritized. So I think to the extent to which the committee play a role in that, it would be useful.
They are negotiating with Parliament about what is priority. So there are two major meetings. Yes, in fact, the meeting we're going to now at 12 o'clock is also about that. The attitude has changed now. It's not for the executive solely to decide what is priority. The parliamentary committees must also have a say. So to be fair to our minister and deputy minister, they've been extremely cooperative. So on this issue, I can assure you, we will put in our report, but it's a new committee that will have to pursue it.
And it's that, and thank you, sir. I think on the last issue about the impact of the DSO, whatever restructuring of the DSO, I think that to be frank with the committee, you will see from our own statistics that the vast bulk of the big cases, the big money cases that we get, have come out of the DSO. And, you know, as public servants, it's not our job to say to Parliament what it must do or mustn't do about policy issues. But I think that it is very important when one looks at whatever future model one is going to look at here, that we must preserve some of the key elements, I think, that have made that model successful so far. And perhaps for me there are four key elements. I think you and others have alluded to it already. I think the one is to ensure that one can attract and retain really skilled investigators and prosecutors. I think the second element is to ensure that prosecutors, investigators, analysts work together in a really integrated way on a day-to-day level. And that spills over into the third element, which means essentially sitting together under the same roof. I think the FCCU and other examples have really shown how important that is if you want to get people to work together on a day-to-day basis. I think there are some debates about whether the people who actually prosecute a case should be part of the investigation. Now, frankly, those issues have been argued in the Concord, and they have not had a problem with them. It has been argued already. But I think if it is, that is, in the DSO itself, they are trying to distinguish between what they may call investigating prosecutors and prosecuting prosecutors. So there are prosecutors who are part of the investigation. Inevitably, they almost become witnesses in the case. But they are vital to ensure that the investigation is done in a way that will stand up to scrutiny in court and that the right evidence is gathered in the right way. So that perspective is very important. But when there's a conflict between their role as a prosecutor, you know, then another prosecutor would be brought in to prosecute the case in court, not the one who was, if somebody becomes too deeply involved in the investigation. I think a fourth element, very critically, and I think we all know that law enforcement is an environment where corruption is always a big threat. You know, any big criminal, the first port of call is to try and corrupt those who are investigating. And I think the DSO itself has had its own challenges in that regard as well. But I think it is vital that one has an environment that is as clean as it can possibly be. You know, an environment where people can be screened as effectively as possible to ensure that corruption, internal integrity issues can be kept to a maximum. So, sorry, maybe just the last element because it's not necessarily unclear, but I think an environment where people really can be screened effectively before they come in a way. And I think the final element is that it must be a coherent national structure. You know, I think one's dealing with often national syndicates, international operations. You need to be able to deal with that in a coherent national way. So, you know, whatever options I think ultimately get decided on, for me it's very important just from our own experience of working with different agencies, that one tries to preserve those elements in whatever model it is that one is in.
And we then vacate this room. Do you want to say something, Mr. Chair, for now?
No, Chair, I was just at the item and summary at the end on Tuesday.
We meet 9 o'clock next Tuesday. Where will it be? Okay, the members need to know the following. While we were, we decided that it's quite a lot we have to do, so we're going to postpone it the next Tuesday. But we are meeting the Namibia delegation with B454 at 3 p.m. tomorrow. We don't need to meet. I'll fix you later. So can we have at least one from the DA, one from the, there's only one, from the ACTP,
and
it's a 45-minute meeting. It's the improvement of our committee. It's 3 o'clock tomorrow, yeah. B454. Right, Friday's meeting takes place as planned. J.B. Simonioni will be chairing mainly.
It's E249 JV. 9:30 to 12. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. 9:30 to 12:30. That's on Friday. Now, Carol has to be away for a very legitimate reason, which we're pleased to know, and be advertising to the whole world. Don't get to two. But we will postpone the adoption of the regulations on CARA to not CARA. What? Why? Just explain the regulations with an act to next Tuesday. So we can't reach next Wednesday. This Tuesday we'll have the MPA. So our friends from the MPA, thank you very much. For those who are not coming back, we express our gratitude for your presence and your contribution. Unfortunately, we couldn't have a sit down because it's budget day and they're refurbishing two of the restaurants out of the four. So there's a, for what it's worth, a single lunch out there. Thank you all.
After the debate, the budget debate, then we can use it urgent. Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
Oh, yeah. One thing.